I think we always are trying to sort of continually grow the business. Mm-hmm. Because once you stop trying, then I think it can just become stale pretty quickly.
This is A New Angle, and I'm your host, Justin Angle, marketing professor at the University of Montana. This podcast is all about creativity and hustle happening in and around the great state of Montana. I'd like to start off the episode with just kind of a special thank you to all the listeners, to all of you. This has been a really fun, fulfilling journey for all of us here at the podcast, and it's sort of a random milestone, but this is our 20th episode since launching back in late January of this year. It's been really fun. We've gotten a lot of encouragement and positive feedback from the community, from many of you. Great ideas about how to make the show better, great suggestions for guests, and I just really appreciate that. Please keep that energy coming and help us grow the show. We've got a pretty good audience now, but we're trying to expose it to more people, to grow it, to improve the quality, to make it more sustainable. So if you have any ideas for how to do that, whether it's an idea for a guest, an idea for promoting it more efficiently or effectively, or an idea for a sponsor, let me know. Send me an email at anewangle@umontana.edu. Okay, so today's episode is a special one. I interview Matt McQuilkin, the co-owner and co-founder of Black Coffee Roasting. I have kind of a special relationship with black coffee in the sense that, you know, when I moved here in 2012, it was kind of my point of entry in a way. First place I got a cup of coffee, and getting a cup of coffee is a pretty intimate thing, or it can be. It's a big, it can be a big community builder. And going over to their location, I think it was on Wyoming or Montana off of Russell Street, it was just such a fun ritual for me and my daughters early on in our time here. And it's just been really fun to track the success of that business and the role it plays in the community, not only through creating outstanding product, but also in supporting a lot of the things going on in town. So talking to Matt was a pleasure. It was really fun to learn the path he took that sort of uniquely positioned himself for success in the coffee industry. We'll trace his past through the Good Food Store, through his experience as the cheesemonger, sort of developing his palate. And then, you know, as his business has grown, it's been really interesting to see and listen to his view of this community and why it's a special place and how a certain milieu of businesses really sort of support themselves, support each other. And there's a great sort of spirit among many of the entrepreneurs in the town. So it's a fun conversation. And as always, I hope you enjoy it as much as I did. I'll turn you over to Black Coffee's Matt McQuilkin.
Okay, so we're here with Matt McQuilkin. Matt, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, no problem, Justin.
So Matt is the co-owner of Black Coffee with Jim. What's Jim's last name? Jim Chapman. I haven't talked as much with Jim, but I've enjoyed getting to know you the last few months. It's sort of a strange thing that we haven't known each other for longer.
Yeah.
Paths have crossed on various occasions, and many people have said, "Oh yeah, you should know Matt." Mm-hmm. And but I feel like I've known your product and your business for a long time. It was one of my first and early favorites moving here to Missoula in 2012. A real estate agent gave us a bag of I think it was the AM blend.
Most likely that's still our most popular coffee.
Yeah, so. And I was just blown away. Like, this place is awesome. And I used to drive out to your location on Russell all the time. And it was actually my favorite place to go and do work because I never never see anybody out there that I knew.
Yeah, it was pretty quiet.
Yeah, just an awesome place. So I want to get into all that. But first of all, one of the things you said to me the first time I sort of met you was, "Hey, nice hat." And it was a Red Sox hat. And so how does a guy from Boston area end up in Missoula? Maybe get into that story.
Well, yeah. So I was actually born in Manhattan but my folks lived in New Jersey when I was born. They just drove to Manhattan for the birth because it was the closest hospital. My dad took a job in Boston when I was two. So I grew up in Boston. Don't have any real emotional connection to New York aside from being born there, but grew up in Boston and had a love growing up there. Huge Red Sox fan, always have been, After high school, my parents had divorced. My dad moved down to Atlanta. Okay. And at the time, I was closer with my dad. So I ended up going to school in Memphis, Tennessee for 3 semesters because I wanted to be commuting distance from my father.
Sure.
But just hated living in the Southeast so much. It just, the lifestyle was not for me. And I was really craving being in the mountains. I had done a Knowles course when I was in high school.
Oh, where was the Knowles course?
In the Wind Rivers in Wyoming. It was like a mountaineering
course. National Outdoor Leadership School.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And after that, I've talked to other people that kind of share a similar story, but I was so just captured by the mountains by sort of the outdoor lifestyle, and recreation that I knew that I wanted to get back to. I wanted to live in the mountains, in the Rockies.
Right.
And so when going to school in Memphis didn't really pan out for me as far as, I just couldn't stand it. Like I said, that's when I made the leap and just said, I'm moving to the mountains. And didn't really know anything about Missoula and kind of moved here on a whim with a buddy of mine.
Okay.
And him and I were both kind of like, we were kind of dreamers and we were always kind of like coming up with big ideas that we were going to do, and none of them really ever happened. So when we said we were moving to Montana, everyone was like, people were like, no, whatever, you're not moving to Montana.
Right, who the heck do you think you are?
Well, I mean, in Memphis, like, all people don't even know where, like, people are like, people actually live in Montana.
Right, what is Montana?
Do they have cars there? Literally people, would have believed you if you said that we just rode horses.
Totally.
But we ended up packing up our car, and we moved out to Montana, and that was kind of it. Moved to a town that we knew nothing about. And
sure. That being Missoula,
yeah, and that was in January of 1997.
Okay.
So semester ended in Memphis in December and then transferred. And so I did my 2.5 years of college here, graduated college from the University of Montana.
Okay, and what did you study here?
That's a funny story. I got a Bachelor of Science in Resource Conservation.
Okay.
And we serve a bunch of coffee on campus at this point.
Yeah.
And I graduated in 99. I never saw my diploma. So all these years, I didn't actually know. I was like, did I miss a credit? If I actually graduated. And we were on campus last week. Last month. And one of my coworkers and I was like, do you have a second? And she said, yeah. And I said, can we stop at the registrar's office real quick? So I went in there and asked them. I was like, hey, my name is Matt McQuilkin. Can you tell me if I actually graduated?
Right.
And they said that I did. And they asked me if I'd like to pay the $30 or whatever for a...
Oh, geez, of course. Yeah,
and
yeah.
I did. And it showed up at my house 2 days ago. So I just got my diploma.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. I graduated.
Are you going to walk this spring?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, if you want to, let me know. We'll get you a seat.
Okay. So where was I going with that?
Yeah, so resource conservation.
Resource conservation,
this is late 90s.
Late 90s, yep. Okay. I graduated in 99. And it's funny because a lot of people are like, so many people like you never actually use your degree. And I say, I use my degree every single day. There's like the coffee industry and resource conservation are extremely tied together. There's a lot of connections there. And especially with black coffee because we're super focused on sustainability.
That's one thing that struck me right away when getting to know your business is the deep commitment to sustainability, mm-hmm. transparency in your supply mm-hmm. chain, reading about the particulars of your roaster and how special that is. So I'd love to touch on all of those.
We can talk about all that stuff, for sure. But we're super proud of it, and we try to really boast about it, actually, because it's an unusual... We're 100% organic.
Yeah.
And that alone, within the coffee industry, is extremely unusual. Mm-hmm. And you'll notice that pretty much any coffee roaster will probably have some organic coffees. Some of them won't, but most will have some organic coffees. But they'll mostly also have a bunch of non-organic coffees. And we, within a year of being open, we drew the line and said that we wanted to be 100% organic.
Okay. And opening, that was 2010,
right? We opened in 2010.
Okay. Should we gloss over the stuff between the late 90s and 2010? Like, what were you up to in 2010?
I had kids young.
Okay.
So I was 23 when I got the call from my now wife. That we were going to have a baby.
Yeah.
And I was working at Mackenzie River Pizza at the time out on Reserve Street. It used to be in Rowdy's Cabin.
Okay.
So I was working at Mackenzie River. I quickly took a job at the Good Food Store then. So I started working at the Good Food Store in 2000, back when it was on Kensington Street, the old little location.
Okay.
I worked in the deli there. And I worked there for 8.5 years. Pretty quickly after I got the job there, I ended up transferring over and I became the cheese buyer.
Okay, so starting to get to know supply chain.
Well, not only supply chain, but developing a palate.
Yeah.
Which was really important. So I was the cheese buyer for like 6 years and I loved the job.
Okay.
Loved working at the Good Food Store. Still love the Good Food Store. Know a lot of people over there. It's a great company, and they treat me. And one of the reasons I started there is because they offered insurance to employees.
Yeah, which as a father,
a kid, and so and they also had a profit sharing deal because it's a they're a nonprofit.
Okay,
so they have profit sharing with their employees.
Sure.
And if it hadn't been for that, I don't know if I would have had that really helped in the financials of opening Black Coffee. So so I have a lot to owe the Good Food Store.
And they've been a great partner for you guys since the start, I would
imagine. Yeah. We have one of many, but the Good Food Store has been, they've been on board with Black Coffee very early.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, before we even had a product to show them, that they were on board with selling what we. So worked there for 8.5 years, 6 years as a cheese buyer. Like I say, I really developed a palate. Because you can kind of transfer over like a palate from something like cheese to coffee pretty easily. And my business partner, Jim, was in the wine industry.
Okay.
And the same thing, you develop a palate. Because developing a palate is really kind of just like focusing on subtle nuances. And once you start like learning to sort of single out flavor elements and just kind of think in that way.
Uh-huh.
And I've always been pretty nerdy like that when it comes to like flavor and food. And like even like in my 20s, we used to have like do little wine tastings over at my house, and and Amy would kind of laugh at me because we're like doing the whole like sipping and spitting of wine, and so I've always like been predisposed to thinking in those terms. So it helped me develop a palate, but also especially at the new Good Food Store where it's at now, as the cheesemonger, I was on the floor all the time, and I talked to so many people and I met so many folks from Missoula. Through doing that. And then also through the 2000s and into now, my wife and I have just been super involved in the community as far as sitting on boards. We started that. There's this kickball league in town that we started.
Okay.
And we're actually no longer involved. We ran that for 8 years and just really like made a lot of connection in this town.
And your wife's an entrepreneur herself.
She as well. She owns Betty's Divine. Yeah, right. Amy. Yep.
Two small to medium-sized businesses in the same family. I mean, no shortage of demands on your time.
No. So at any rate, so that's sort of how. And then after the Good Food Store, I worked at. I was the manager of the coffee shop at Le Petit Autre.
Okay.
Over there on Myrtle and Fourth. So I did that for 2 years.
Another place that takes seriously the experience, the taste, the product.
Absolutely. And they make good coffee. And and so sort of got a little bit further into the coffee industry there. And then, you know, opening Black Coffee was one of those things where, you know, there are different businesses in town that Missoulians really relate to.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, working at Le Petit, amongst the people that I sort of associate with, like if you want a loaf of bread, you're going to go to Le Petit.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to go get an ice cream sundae, you're going to go to the Big Dipper.
Right.
Because it just resonates. If you want to go grab a beer, you're going to go to the Kettle House or now out to Big Sky now that they have their tap room. You know, there's certain places that just like, you know, you have friends that come into town and you're like, oh, we got to go check out this. You gotta go have some ice cream, or you know.
So what do you think that is about Missoula? Because I noticed that too. And, you know, I've lived in big cities, small towns, but I noticed that right away. Like there was definitely places to go when I moved here.
Well,
like,
I think
this is where you go for your coffee. This is where you go for your beer. This is who you talk to for your bike, whatever it is. And loyal followings.
I think the Missoulians really like to take care of their own.
Yeah.
And they really like to support people that support this town, I think is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I'm from Boston, and a lot of folks in Montana would tell me I'm not from Montana because I was born in Boston. At this point, living here 20 years and being as involved as I have been in the community, and not because I'm trying to get something back from it, but just because I love it here and I'm going to live here my whole life, and I got two kids now, and they've both been raised here, and I never plan on leaving. And so I've really tried to like put as much energy in as I can into this town.
Yeah.
And I think people from Missoula just recognize that, and they can smell a lie from a mile away. So it's like, if your intentions are to try to just like make money off of this town, it just doesn't work. Corporations downtown don't work so well.
Right. Right.
And I always told people like two things. My goals as far as Black Coffee were, and my business partners as well, was always just to live in the town that I want to live in and to raise my kids here.
Yep.
And sort of be able to afford them, a nice childhood.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's it. You know what I mean? And I always tell people that, like, if you're looking for a get-rich-quick scheme, don't open a small business in Missoula, Montana.
Right, right.
You know, it's not... You know, Black Coffee, I'm so happy because I've been able to do, like I said, I've been able to stay here and raise my kids here, and I love my job.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to always say that there are two types of people in this world, or three actually, but mainly there are two. One is folks that are really career driven, and they will do whatever it takes to make it in a certain profession. And, you know, some doctors would fall into this category, maybe some professors as well,
yep.
where it's like, I'm going to be a doctor, and no matter where I have to go to take a job, I will do that because I want I want this profession.
Yep.
There are other folks, and I put myself into that category before. Now, like I said, I did love my job at the good food store, but the other person would be, I'm really committed to living in a certain place,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to sort of do whatever it takes to piece things together so that I can stay there.
Right. Right.
And then the third person, which is, I think, a small percentage of folks, is someone that gets both of those things. Mm-hmm. And I just feel super lucky to be one of those people now that has both of those things. I love my job, and I love where I live.
Yeah, so let's get into that. I guess I would probably put myself, by virtue of good luck and accident, in that third category. I mean,
I was going to say that about you, but I didn't want to speak for you.
Yeah, I mean, this job, you know, did my grad school at University of Washington, mm-hmm. big city, but also a city that affords a quality of life and an access.
But so you grew up in the East?
I did. Yeah. Grew up in New Hampshire and then bounced around, college in Philadelphia, a few years in San Francisco, back to Philly,
mm-hmm.
and to Seattle. But yeah, you know, a university like the University of Montana wasn't really on my radar screen. Mm-hmm. These academic job markets are a little odd in that it's this unique kind of convergence of your skills, the needs of the university, the fit, and all these different things. You don't have a lot of control over where you go. And I was just hugely fortunate that University of Montana was hiring for somebody with my skill set. And it's just been this, I feel like I lucked out.
Yeah.
Great job in a great town.
Yeah,
so
totally.
Similar, but I feel like I sort of walked into it blindly, hugely fortunate, but you created this. So you're in a situation, you get a young family, how do you then, and you're starting to learn more about coffee at some point, you're getting to know Jim more,
yep.
and decide, developing this palette and thinking, you know, what's sort of the notion of, like, okay, let's do this.
Yeah, to bring it back around, I realize now that we just went on a tangent, but so we were talking about the Big Dipper, we're talking about like Big Sky and Kettle House, we were talking about Le Petit. And it was sort of while I was at the Petit that I was thinking to myself, there's really no, at that point, it didn't feel like there was really a coffee brand as far as like a roastery that Missoulians really resonated with, where they were like, oh, we got to go check out, you know, I mean, there was really no coffee roaster in Missoula at the time because Hunter Bay's around here, but those guys are out in Lolo and, you know, they do a solid job, but because they're in Lolo, now they have a coffee shop in Missoula, but because they're in Lolo, I think it was just enough off the beaten path that if someone's in Missoula, there wasn't really an opportunity to go check out their facility, you know?
Yeah.
So at the time there was no one that was roasting coffee in Missoula.
Right.
And we were like, we would love to like be, you know, sort of who people kind of resonate with, Missoulians, like the Missoulians Coffee Roasting Company. And also at the time in Missoula, like the you know, like the sort of lighter roasted coffee, which was definitely on trend in 2010 when we opened, wasn't really being represented much in Missoula. Most of the roasters from around here that are being sold here were doing them like real dark roasted coffees. And there's still a market for that. But we wanted to focus on sort of the lighter roasted coffees, the more subtle nuances of coffee.
Okay. And so you're thinking about this from the standpoint of place.
Yeah.
Not a roaster here.
Uh-huh. A niche. I mean, you have to sort of, you know, opening a business, that's definitely like, and I have a lot of folks now that just, in a way, because we got lucky maybe, or we were smart or whatever, but we're going on 8 years and I'm still having my fingers crossed because 10 years is sort of the magic number when it comes to small business.
Uh-huh.
But I think at this point that I can say that we're probably going to make it to 10 years things are going well. So when folks come to me and ask me for advice on opening a business, that's the first thing is you have to establish a niche. You have to figure out a market that's not being served.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're opening a business and you're thinking about doing something that's already being done, well, you better kind of second guess yourself a little bit.
Or be really confident that you can do it better.
Totally. Totally. But at the time, what we were doing was definitely a market that was not being served.
So at this point in town, did people have much, and I say people, like a lot of people going and getting their coffee, wherever it is around town.
Mm-hmm.
Do people have much thought about where the beans are coming from, whether it's the brand or with you guys even deeper, not just the brand, but the whole sort of transparent supply chain that brand represents? But are people thinking about where their beans are coming from at that point?
I don't think so, really. I mean, I think that you sort of, especially in Missoula, which was, you know, Portland, San Francisco and Seattle were kind of the driving towns behind the sort of like the what would be called black coffee would be considered a third wave roaster.
Okay.
And so that's sort of like...
Actually define, yeah, what's this third wave? I thought you were going to say third place because that was kind of a Starbucks term, but...
No, like first wave would be like Starbucks.
Okay.
Second wave would be like Stumptown.
Stumptown and those guys.
Third wave is like the small roasters that
got it
are around. So I think at the time of Missoula, I don't think people really were thinking about where their beans were coming from. I think they were sort of thinking, you know, they knew that like if they went shopping for coffee that they liked Sumatra or they, you know, there'd be like a name that they resonated with. But blends were so popular. And when you buy a blend, you really don't know mm-hmm. where those beans are coming from. So I don't think so. But I think that, you know, like I said, I think there were just like some trigger words that people had when they were shopping that sort of led them to a coffee or the way a package looked on the shelf, maybe.
Sure.
I think that we really started trying to bring attention to like origins of coffee. And also, you know, one of the things that we've tried to do through social media and also just through talking to our customers is that, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into growing coffee. We're only one part of the process. You can't, there's a lot of work that goes into it, and the science behind coffee growing has really changed to where like the ways that coffee is processed, in process being in the country of origin after it's harvested, the way it's dried essentially, the way it's dealt with, the methods of processing, the growing conditions, how attentive the farmers are when harvesting the coffee, making sure they're just harvesting ripe cherries.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what goes into a great cup of coffee or us roasting good coffee doesn't happen at Black Coffee, but rather happens at origin, where the coffee is grown.
Okay.
And then it kind of goes down through the line, through the importers and exporters. Eventually, mm-hmm. we get the coffee, and then we roast it. And so it's like, and then we prepare it. You know, we have a barista and an espresso machine, and then we give you a cup of coffee, and trying to make sure that people recognize the connection between this cup of coffee that we're giving you and that person that started the coffee plant 3,000 miles away 4 years ago, you know, because it takes a little while for a coffee plant to even start producing cherries. So it's so really trying to bring attention to the fact that we can't take a poorly grown coffee bean and roast great coffee of it.
Sure.
We can take a really great coffee bean and ruin it.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like there's a there's definitely a responsibility that we feel to the folks that are growing the coffee, and just trying to recognize that relationship that we're so proud to be a part of.
So how does that relationship work? I guess what I'm sort of thinking about is, you know, 2010, you're launching this business, you want to roast beans here, you have a deep commitment to sustainability and transparency in your supply chain. How do you then decide, okay, we're going to buy beans from this zone or this farmer? I don't even know how that supply chain works. I mean, can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, there's what's called a coffee belt that basically it's X many degrees above and below the equator. So picture, picture a belt around the globe.
Yeah.
That kind
of
is on, the middle of the belt is right over the equator.
Okay.
Okay. And so that's where coffee is grown, along that belt. And so like the furthest north and closest to us that you can buy coffee from is Mexico, but you can only buy it from Oaxaca and Chiapas. Okay. Anything north of Oaxaca, I think Chiapas is south of Oaxaca, yeah. Anything north of Oaxaca is too far north for coffee to grow.
Okay.
And so so Mexico and then down into Central and South America, you can get a lot of coffee. As it goes and goes over, you get into, as it travels, if you travel east around that line, you would get to Indonesia. So you get a lot of coffee from Indonesia. That's where Sumatra is. That's where Bali is. Papua New Guinea, the island of Java. And then over into Africa. And there are a bunch of African countries where you can buy coffee from. Ethiopia, Kenya, Uganda, the Congo. But it's not all of Africa. It's just these countries that are along that belt. And then over into Hawaii. So that's where all the coffee that anybody can get is from.
Sure.
There's different coffees grown at different elevations, different climates. So there's a word that you might have heard of called terroir. And it basically just means that, you know, coffee grown in one place, even if you took the same exact coffee plant and planted it in two different places, the coffee that comes from that plant is going to taste different because of different humidities, different temperatures, different altitudes, annual rainfall, the soil type, whether it's volcanic soil or not.
Sure.
And so all of those things affect the coffee beans. And likewise, coffee from the same exact farm year to year is going to taste different because, you know, every year is different in a place that's hotter or colder or whatever. So we don't necessarily ever commit to getting coffee from the same farm year after year.
Okay.
Only because, like I said, some farms might have a really great harvest one year and then maybe the next year it's not as good. So we try to work with different farms. That said, now that Jim is doing more international travel and we're actually starting to create some relationships with some individual farms and doing some direct trade type stuff, you know, you start getting into that, and then once you start getting to know families or cooperatives or individuals in other countries and developing friendships, then you start, you know, wanting to kind of go back to the same farms year after year because you have an emotional connection to them.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
And you, I mean, that speaks to kind of this notion of transparency as well.
It does, yeah.
So, okay, so you launched the shop, and you're over in this, just off of Russell with Home Resource for 4 or 5 years there?
No, not even.
Maybe less. When did you move over to the Quonset?
No, I guess you're right. I guess it was just shy of 4 years that we were over there.
Yeah. It seemed like at that point, the majority of the game was
wholesale.
The roasting, wholesale. Yeah.
Well, when we first opened, we weren't even going to have retail.
Yeah, okay.
That was our initial plan.
So, yeah, what was the kind of decision-making there?
Well, the decision-making there was that, so we knew that we wanted to focus on wholesale, but we also, you know, you need to know that your product is tasting right.
Yeah.
So we needed to have an espresso machine. We needed to have the grinders. We needed to have an industrial coffee maker because we needed to... You know, it was really a friend of mine that was like, so let me get this straight. Like, you're going to have an espresso machine. And we're like, yeah. And they're like, and you're going to have all the equipment. The grinders.
You're gonna make a ton of coffee.
And we're like, yeah. And they're like, and you're not going to sell any.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Because, I mean, that first location was awesome in the sense that I felt like you just soak up knowledge of the product walking in there.
Yeah. It was because you're surrounded by it.
It was immersive.
Yeah.
You go in and buy beans, and whoever was staffing the shop, you can't even really call it a shop.
It was mostly me and Jim.
Yeah.
And then Rory was on board, and then Kara was on early. And Rory and Kara are still with us, and they've been there for years. So everyone.
I remember at the time that Kara would ride the bike with. You had the van and the bike and yep. deliver beans all around town.
Yeah, and I mean, when we first opened up for the first while, it was just me and Jim, our hours were 10 to noon Monday through Friday.
For tasting?
Just for coming in to buy a cup of coffee or a bag of coffee.
Yeah, and the rest of the time was hustling around town?
Yeah, because we were doing, I was the barista and, you know, Jim and I both roasted. And then him and I were trying to do like... accounts receivable payable,
yeah.
And we were trying to go out and get new accounts, so we were doing sales, and you know, doing all the coffee bagging.
And what are these? I mean, any one of those things you just listed, there's a point in your process where you're like, okay, I can't do this all. I need to hire somebody. To do it. Like, what are those milestones? What's that thought process for you? Because that's something that trips up a lot of entrepreneurs. They think, I can't afford to hire somebody, but they don't value their own time enough in the equation.
So over the years, I'll give you the milestones. But so we hired a couple of folks that are our first employees, and they each worked like 4 hours a week, I think.
Okay.
Like 2 hours on Tuesdays and two hours on Thursdays or something like that. And so we started doing that. And so they were sort of became the baristas.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe their hours expanded. So they were doing all the barista work and Jim and I were just roasting.
Okay.
Kara came on really early and she was doing our books at the time. She's now our green bean buyer as well.
Okay.
So she's taken over that, which was one of my jobs. And then we hired folks to bag the coffee and then, you know, eventually a delivery driver.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have 20 employees. And so, you know, if you're talking about like as an entrepreneur, like kind of the rule of thumb, you know, if you're looking at it from sort of like a national level, is people say that you want to create time for yourself where you're no longer working in your business, but rather you're working on your business.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we've tried to achieve that. But at the same time, I haven't taken it quite as literally as some might.
Okay.
Because I still like working in my business.
Yeah.
And I like hanging out and spending time with my employees and getting to know them and, you know, letting them get to know me. And it gives me the connection with the customers as well. So I work, you know, I work the bar one day a week making drinks, and which is actually something I stopped doing for a while. And now I'm able to do it again. So I don't know. I think that maybe Missoula, to just say I'm going to work on my business, not in your business, to me that maybe feels like it becomes less personal.
Yeah, and I think that mindset is really consistent with that community ethic that
right.
is central to, you know, your work and your
yeah.
wife's work, and also what sort of indicates success in this place or enables success
right.
in this
yeah.
place.
Like I don't like it, and I don't know that Missoulians in general do. It's always odd to me when I see a business and I'm like, oh, like the owner's never there.
Yeah, there's an authenticity that here
yeah.
With the successful businesses in this community that I think to me stands out.
Yeah.
So speaking of that authenticity, you know, from my perspective as a marketing professor, one of the things that I'm really interested in is branding.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, branding starts with a great product.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the stories you tell with that product. And it was, you know, one of the things I've always respected and admired about Black Coffee is you guys just do a great job telling stories
mm-hmm.
about the business, about the community, about the coffee. And can you talk a little bit about how the branding came to be and how you guys approach your communication with customers, both in the store and with your social feeds and things
yeah,
like that?
Well... The branding, like if you want to think about the initial branding being the bag,
mm-hmm.
the bag of coffee.
Yeah.
And at the time what we were really going for was we wanted a very, very simple, clean, bold package. Both Jim and I are pretty, pretty attracted to kind of Scandinavian,
okay.
Scandinavian design,
yep.
Which is very angular, and Simple, elegant, bold lines.
Yeah.
And so that was sort of where we started with. You know, AM was sort of our original idea.
Mm-hmm.
So we started with AM and PM. We thought we'd, you know, PM being decaf and AM
being...
Yeah,
the big block letter. Yeah.
The big block letters. And just, you know, if you look at any... Like, if you go to a grocery store and you check out, like, a beer section or a wine section or olive oil or coffee or whatever, everything can... It gets so busy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
And sometimes if you just create a really simple, bold look, it kind of stands out in this sea of sort of chaos.
Yeah, I can see how the AM, both the AM and the PM.
And the single origin.
Yeah, both all three of those really stand out.
Yeah,
sure.
So that's kind of where we started.
Okay.
Have stuck with it. And we sort of tried to tie that same sort of theme into our shop in the Quonset hut now.
Uh-huh.
With the colors, and we tied in the colors, the colors from our coffee bags a little bit into our shop, and I don't know if you ever noticed that with the green wall and the white.
Absolutely. It ties in with the single origin bags.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah.
But still have tried to really in our shop, we don't hang a whole lot of artwork on our walls. We have mm-hmm. pretty, it's not bare, it's not cold, it's just, it's pretty clean and simple.
Yeah.
Deliberate
too.
Deliberately so, yes.
Yeah.
And then as far as marketing goes, you know, it's like I really feel like, I mean, Jim's done such a good job with our social media feed, and so our Instagram feed.
Is that
feed,
mostly his photography?
That's all
too.
His
he
photography.
He is such a gifted photographer.
Yeah, totally. Totally.
Yeah.
And so that sort of, that talent of his has just sort of, I think it came to be a marketing benefit for us just sort of out of sheer luck. It just happens to be one of his passions
mm-hmm.
and something he's really good at. And our Instagram feed isn't so much about coffee as it is just about sort of Montana lifestyle.
Yeah.
So that's been really fun. And then, like I say, I think that just, you know, through us really liking people
mm-hmm.
and talking to people. I mean, I think that I want to pick your brain a little bit another time, because I feel like I need some marketing advice, but we might have just gotten kind of lucky, maybe. I don't think it's just luck. I mean, I think it's just sort of maybe our the skill set that we just brought with us to the table just sort of naturally lended itself towards some pretty...
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I wouldn't classify it as luck so much as you have an authenticity
uh-huh.
that is clear. And you have a clear notion of what you want to develop as a product.
Right.
And how you want to tell the stories around that product. And then some great ability to then execute.
Yeah.
I mean, you've executed well as entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. but also the storytelling piece.
The storytelling, and that's just, you know, through connection with people.
Yeah.
And we, I mean, for a while, we never advertised, like, in anything. Like, there was never a black coffee ad in a newspaper, and
yeah.
there's still very little. Like, we always thought our best advertising was to be able to get a cup of coffee into somebody's hand, and so we focused more on going places and giving away free coffee.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are everywhere. You get the product out there,
mm-hmm.
and the other thing you do is you have cool events at the shops, at tastings,
uh-huh.
and what were they called? Like the pop-up you did over the holidays?
Yep, the pop-up holiday sale.
Yeah, so interacting with other businesses
mm-hmm.
and co-branding. And
there are definitely a handful of shops that kind of opened up at the same time as us.
Yeah.
Around Missoula, like the Burn Street Bistro
right.
and the Dram Shop.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of this sort of generation of businesses. And so it's been pretty fun for us to kind of align ourselves with those guys.
Yeah, it's like this generational cohort of entrepreneurs.
Yeah, Killing Frost Farm and Mighty Fine Farms. And
you guys did a blend for, I don't know if it was a blend, but you did like a bourbon barrel aged thing
yep.
for Montgomery Distillery, if I recall.
Yep, totally. Montgomery Distillery. Those guys are good buddies of ours. And
yeah,
we got a bourbon barrel from them and aged some coffee beans in that. And so it's been fun to sort of like align ourselves with other folks. And then also as far as events and whatnot that we sponsor, really trying to choose carefully.
Yeah.
And choose carefully, but also choose organizations and events that really strike us as beneficial and sort of, you know, kind of aligning ourselves with folks that enjoy the same parts of Montana that we do. So like at this point, as you know, we're a big sponsor, one of the one of the bigger sponsors of The Rut with Mike Wolf and Mike Foote. You know,
absolutely.
I think The North Face is their title sponsor, but then they have a handful of second-tier sponsors who are there. MTB Missoula last year, we were one of their title sponsors, which felt really good. This year, we're going to be doing some stuff with Backcountry Hunters and Anglers.
Oh, great.
Which is a really cool organization that happens to be based out of Missoula, Montana. They're really neat. Their name implies that they would just be sort of like a hunting and fishing organization. But they go way beyond that. They're really like one of the main organizations nationwide that is really like on the ground everywhere advocating for open space and public land. And that's a huge thing for Jim and I is open space and public land and the importance of that. And generally try not to get too political, but that's a political issue. Not trying to get too political as a business. But that's one area that we want to be very outspoken about. And so to be able to support BHA and what those guys are doing as far as like really advocating diligently and consistently for open space and open land, we're excited. So this year will be our first year as a sponsor for those guys.
That's fantastic.
But, you know, we sponsor the Missoula Art Museum. And I mean, gosh, it's funny because we really like – I don't know that we've hardly ever – said no to sponsoring something. Rocky Horror Picture Show.
You still sponsor the Ski Patrol or something?
We sponsor the Ski Patrol or the Snowball. They all wear patches and we give them money annually. And so, it's been really fun just to sort of like get involved with as many people as we can. The public schools in Missoula, we help out with events for the public schools and donate coffee for, you know, they have their Mother's Day and Father's Day events at the schools, and we give coffee to those. And so it's just we really like I say, we like to – there's a number of folks that we sponsor because they're maybe advocating for similar issues that we enjoy, but then also to align ourselves with as many different Missoula-based organizations as possible has been fun.
And there's something about that. Like coffee is – it's a powerful vehicle to create intimacy.
It is. It creates conversation and relationships,
I mean, you definitely know it when you go into a place and it's like this giant vat of brown liquid that you don't know a thing about.
Yeah.
You go to the gas station. Or if it's a place that's thoughtful about what it is that you're serving or sharing or whatever it is. And you guys do it right.
Thank you.
It's been fun to sort of, well, I mean, like I said, I moved here a couple of years after you launched, but just to kind of be observing your business from an outsider perspective. As we kind of end this thing, I want to talk about what might be next for Black Coffee in terms of expansion or ideas for your business.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to keep those cards a little bit close to my chest.
We're not in the news business.
but we definitely like, and the thing is that, I mean, Jim and I are like, we have a constant stream of ideas.
Yeah.
And some of them happen and some of them don't.
Sure.
But no, we definitely like, for us, we don't necessarily want to, you know, grow the business in any crazy ways at this point because we're happy with where it's at. But I think that from a business perspective as well, one, if you actually decide that you're going to stop trying to grow your business. So I just went and said that we don't really need to grow the business.
Yeah.
But I think we always are trying to sort of continually grow the business because once you stop trying, then I think it can just become stale pretty quickly.
Yeah, complacency.
Complacency. So just trying to like come up with new ideas, keep things fresh, new flavors at the shop. We'd like to do more First Friday events. Those have been fun. Okay. We've been doing them like every other month. And so, for instance, we did a big one with Karen Cartography.
Yep, I remember that one.
And that was, we did in collaboration with our summer blend, which is Topo.
Okay.
And so then we did like we're serving free Topo. Jim just recently got back from Ethiopia, so I think once the fresh crop of coffee that we got from the farm that he was visiting in Ethiopia comes in, I think we'll probably do a slideshow of his trip to Ethiopia and do a an Ethiopian coffee event with the fresh crop.
Awesome.
And so First Friday events, but First Friday events that are tied in with coffee. Not because, like I said, we don't have a whole lot of art on our walls, and because it's a Kwanzaa hut, there's no really
the arching
everything's
walls
curved. So I don't think that we'll ever get into like hanging art every month, but trying to figure out ways that we can tie First Friday events in to sort of coffee education experiences for folks. So that'll be really fun. But yeah, we got a couple other ideas up our sleeve that we'll just have to see if they fall out of the sleeve.
I'm sure they'll fall out, and I'm sure they'll be well subscribed by this community because you guys are such great supporters of it. Matt, this is awesome. I mean, I love your business, your product, your outlook on opportunity, and I really appreciate how generous you've been with your time in this endeavor, but also more broadly, how generous you are in the community.
I appreciate it.
As we close here, I mean, most listeners, I would assume, know about the shop, but just to make sure, how can people find you to experience this great product and learn more about Black Coffee?
Cool. Our address is 525 East Bruce Street. And we're open 7 days a week. Monday through Friday, we open at 6:30. Saturdays at 7, Sundays at 8. You can find us online at blackcoffeeroastingco.com and on Instagram at blackcoffee.mt.
Awesome. Matt, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Justin. That was fun.
Take care.
You too.
All right. It was super fun to talk to Matt. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Coming up next week, we have another Missoula legend, another local business with which you, whether you're from Missoula or maybe even out of town, you've probably heard of these guys, the Big Dipper, Charlie Beaton. Really stoked to talk to Charlie and bring that interview to you. Stay tuned. Remember that A New Angle was brought to you by CED, Consolidated Electrical Distributors. They're one of the largest electrical wholesale companies in the country with nearly 600 locations nationwide. CED is a privately owned business-to-business company that distributes just about every piece of equipment to keep your lights on, your energy flowing, and your lifestyle comfortable. CED is also an important employer in Missoula, and they have a keen interest in University of Montana graduates. To explore career opportunities, check out www.cedcareers.com. Moving forward, if you have any suggestions for guests, cool people doing awesome things with creativity and hustle, please let us know. And if you enjoy this podcast, there are several ways you can support it. First, rate us on iTunes. Ratings help others find the show. Second, write a review. The more reviews we get, and hopefully positive ones, the more we can grow. And third, please just tell your friends about it. In addition, you can support A New Angle financially. For information on sponsorship opportunities, please visit our website, www.business.umt.edu/anewangle. There you will also find a link to support the pod. Before we go, I'd like to thank a few people for making this project happen. First of all, Elizabeth Willey, Communications Director here at the University of Montana College of Business. I'd also like to thank recent UM graduate Michelle DeFluke and our fabulous interns Savannah Sletton and Max Gibson. And a special thanks to VTO for providing the show with music. Finally, thanks to my producer, Stefan Borsum. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, insults, whatever, please email me at anewangle@umontana.edu. Help us spread the word and be sure to use the hashtag #anewangle when you do. Thanks a lot and see you next time.